This is the Reason interview with Nick Gillespie. Thanks for listening. Today's sponsor is Lions of Liberty, one of the longest running libertarian slash anarchist podcast networks in the world. On Mondays, you'll hear John Odermatt deliver a powerful mix of inspiration, health, and faith to set your mind, body, and soul, if you believe in souls, free with Finding Freedom. Every Wednesday, Brian McWilliams is going to make you laugh at our broken world while providing the promise of a better future with his show, Mean Age Daydream. Bowie fans know what he's talking about. Friday includes shows like Meme Wars or Hate Watch or their famous Libertarians in Living Rooms Drinking Liquor episodes. I love these guys, and I'm happy to tell you that they've had me on to talk over the years about everything from South Park and Rick and Morty to the intersection of libertarianism and postmodernism. So check them out today. The Lions of Liberty Network is available everywhere podcasts are found. My guest today is Winsome Sears, the Lieutenant Governor of Virginia. It's also School Choice Week, an annual celebration of all forms of educational choice, from charters to vouchers to unschooling and everything in between. School Choice Week has been taking place since 2011. Reason has a long history with this celebration. Look at the show notes for an archive of our coverage over the past, whatever it is, dozen years or so. So Sears is my guest today because she's an absolute fighter for giving parents more options on where to send their kids to school. She's one of the driving forces behind a new and pretty radical bill that would create so-called backpack funding for kids in Virginia. Parents would be allowed to use the state's portion of per pupil funding for any public or private school for tutoring, books, whatever, other educational expenses. It's going to come to somewhere between $4,000 and $6,000 that would be put in the backpack of the kid to follow them wherever they decide to get learning. If the bill passes, and even Sears herself says it's kind of a long shot, Virginia would join eight other states with education savings accounts. This is a big deal, and it's at the front, the forefront of the school choice revolution. Sears is an interesting character in her own right. She was born in Jamaica in 1964, grew up in New York City, attended New York City public schools before joining the Marines and eventually settling in Virginia, where she's served in the House of Delegates and on the Virginia Board of Education. She became Lieutenant Governor in 2021 on the same ticket as Republican Glenn Youngkin. She's a Republican, just so there's no mystery there, in an election in which education played a major role. You remember towards the end of that election cycle, the Democratic candidate, former Governor Terry McAuliffe, said, "I don't think that parents should be telling schools what to teach in the context of a debate about education and critical race theory," and that kind of blew up in his face. I talk with Sears about why school choice particularly is her biggest issue, the ongoing controversy over her administration's proposed history standards that were rejected last fall by the State Board of Education, and for, I think, legitimate reasons, or understandable reasons at the very least. We also talk about her Black experience in America over the past half century. I don't agree with Winsome Sears on everything, but she's fascinating, interesting, and this is a great conversation. Here is the Reason interview of Lieutenant Governor Winsome Sears. You're supporting legislation to create education savings accounts. Why is this a priority for you right now?
Supporting education savings accounts is a priority for me because the scores are showing that our children aren't learning. When we're looking at 20% of Black children only able to read, you know, by the time that they reach the third, fourth grade, that's a travesty because it doesn't get any better. And we have seen through the years that no matter what was tried, it's not working. And so parents are saying it is time to do something differently so that we can get, wait for it, get different results. Nothing will do, I think, as much as these ESAs will do because it will drive competition. Mm-hmm. Competition will raise all boats.
Yeah, you've likened the ESAs to HSAs or health savings accounts.
Yes.
You know, what's the similarity there and why do you think that will actually spur better outcomes?
Well, because when parents are able to choose where their children should attend school, that's a whole game changer, because now the money follows the child instead of the brick building. We stopped worshiping the brick building and put the money with the child where it should always have been. And I don't understand, frankly, how it can be controversial for a parent to make the decision on the child's education and the child's future. I mean, we know that as soon as anything else happens with the child, they call the parents. So why should this be any different? And by the way, there are people who say that this program helps the rich. Folks, do you think rich parents are waiting on a government program to determine where to send their children to school? The answer is no. They have already made that choice. It is for the rest of us now to have that same opportunity.
Where did you go to public or private school growing up?
I went to public school in Jamaica, as well as here in New York, and my children also went to public school.
Yeah. Did you feel like you had or your parents had enough choice in where you went to school? Or is it that question of, you know, well, some of us, if we're upper middle class or more, you know, yeah, we choose in all sorts of ways, but it's for middle class and especially lower middle class or low income people. This gives them an escape.
Well, the intriguing thing is that when my father first brought me to America when I was 6 years old and I entered the public school in New York, they discovered that I was not learning anything. And indeed, in Jamaica, a third world country in the 60s, I had already had like a pre-K, and then I was starting to move into primary school, elementary school, as we call it. And so I was sent back to Jamaica for school. Then when I came back, I entered the ninth grade, and I was told, even with my transcript showing that I had had chemistry and physics and biology, they said, no, that was general science. But no, in Jamaica, you actually have chemistry, physics, and bio. So guess what? I aced everything. So yeah. With my children now, we moved from California, where we were both in the Marine Corps, and we decided to come to Virginia. We didn't want to go back to New York and South Dakota, where my husband was raised. So we came to Virginia. And yeah. I think just by the grace of God, we were able to move into a neighborhood that, it turns out, had a wonderful school system. It was one of, they would say, the better neighborhoods. We didn't know that. And so they had access to this, that, and the other. My children were even learning Japanese, if you can imagine, in the elementary school. So it turns out that we bought the cheapest house in one of the best neighborhoods, and so they had better schools. So when you're satisfied with something, then of course, then you're fine. But what about those parents who don't have that opportunity? And had my children been in a school that was failing, I would have been hop raving mad to find a way to get them out. And we know where those schools are. We know this. Why would we relegate a child to a failing school?
So critics say that education savings accounts divert tax dollars, you know, public tax dollars from public schools. Is that a legitimate criticism?
Well, let's examine that. To whom does the tax money belong to in the first place? Where did the money come from? Did the government print it? Well, I know, yes, sometimes.
Yeah.
But yes, they print the money. But first of all, helping us against inflation or whatever. But listen, the money, two-thirds of the funds stay with the public schools. Two-thirds of the money. One-third of the money will follow the child to whatever school, homeschool, tutoring, whatever the parent wants to do. Now, I would have loved it if when I had my business, my customer said, well, I'm leaving you. And then I could say, well, two-thirds of your money stays with me. That's what this is about. All the federal funding stays with the local schools. All the local money stays with the local schools. People say, well, all we need to do is just give the schools more money. Wait a minute. We've been doing that, and it's still not working. Right now, for example, if a child is to attend Richmond Public Schools, the tuition as you were, it's $16,000 per year, and the children are still failing. So should we give them 18, 20, 22,000? What number will it be? It is time to make different choices because we can't lose them another year.
The amount of money is, as I've read, is between $4,000 and $6,000.
Between $4,000 and $6,000.
That represents the state's kind of contribution.
State's portion, yes, sir. And it's not a voucher because there's not a direct money from the state to the parent for the child. No, it's going to go in a third party, and they will make the decision once they receive the request to send the monies on. So listen, this is about the children, finally. I mean, I hear some of the pushback is, well, that's not enough money. And I think that was one of the questions you were about to ask. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing with that. So if we took all of the money, is that what they would want, for us to take all of the money? Then you know what they would say? We're defunding the schools. You can't please the naysayers. The naysayers already have that choice. In fact, one of our delegates who sat on the subcommittee in education hearing this said as much. And the only thing is, he put his children in, wait for it, private schools. So we need to be able to make that decision as well.
Are there any church and state issues here? I mean, the money can go to private schools, I'm assuming it can go to religious schools. Mm-hmm. Does that, you know, raise any problems?
No, because what we do know is that there have been three Supreme Court decisions thus far since 2016, which have really pretty much demolished that argument and those boundaries. Trinity Lutheran, Escobar, and Carson. So I tell you, I have had Democrats tell me they know that school choice is coming. It's just a matter of time. So we need, again, for these children to be able to send their the parents to send their child to any school. Another problem that you're going to hear is, well, even if they get the $4,000 to $5,000, that's really not enough for them to pay for a private school or a homeschool, whatever it is. Well, what do we know about nature? It abhors a vacuum. And so you will see businesses spring up to that level of funding. But we already have proof that public schools will take the child because it's happening now. And they're finding, these private schools are finding funds to bring these children into their schools. These are specious arguments that they're making. Let me give you another one. They're also talking about, will the schools be accredited? Are the public schools accredited now? The answer again is no. Whatever they throw up, you have to ask yourself, finally, what is really behind all this? It's about control. This is about who will control the money. And let me tell you something. We must not fool ourselves. If we were to get ESAs through, I can tell you, the teachers' unions will come right to the private schools and say, you all should unionize. They don't really care. They're following the money.
No. Do you think the same teachers in a setting where they're competing for students, the same teachers will do a better job than they're doing now? Or is it the system? What, I mean, why, you know, how does competition solve what's going on right now?
Well, competition has always been the way to really improve just about anything. I mean, look at the Model T. You could have any Model T you wanted as long as it was black, you know, and he was not going to change the engineering because he was the only game in town until other car makers showed up. And suddenly, lo and behold, he decided that the customers should have a choice. It's the same thing here. And by the way, this is not against parents. You know, we have tried with charter schools to change the system. It's a systemic thing. So we've tried to say teachers ought to have merit pay. The ultra Democrats have poo-pooed that. Imagine that you work hard and you get the same pay as everybody else. it doesn't work in their employment. Why should it work for, why shouldn't it work for a public school teacher? Then we have longer hours that some of these teachers are willing to work. But because there's a contract with the unions, the teachers only have this many hours to work. So what we're doing is we're confining the very teachers who are trying to do their very best to teach because, you know, they want to teach. They love the profession. We're just making it so hard for them.
You've likened school choice to Brown versus Board of Education,
yes,
the 1954 Supreme Court case that banned de jure segregation in public schools. You know, what are the similarities between today's school choice movement and the civil rights movement in the 1950s?
So Brown versus Board of Ed, I think, ultimately was never about Black kids getting into a white school. It was always about, ultimately, a parent being able to decide where their children should attend school. It's really that simple. But when you have redlining and the zone issue, then you have segregated schools. And it is mostly affecting Black and Brown children. Majority of our schools, when you look at them now, especially in the urban areas, they're all Black. They're all Black. And most of them are failing. Now, when I sat on Virginia State Board of Education, we were able to say, this school is an A, this school is a B, C. We were able to grade the schools, and you're failing. You don't have access to the children anymore. We're going to put the children elsewhere. Guess what? After I left the board, they lowered the standards to the point where, and they got rid of the ability to tell an A school from a B. And so there isn't that anymore. So the children are in failing schools. Let me say this. We have heard from so many parents of all income strata, public housing, middle class, et cetera. And one mother said, I am working 2 and 3 jobs just so my daughter can have her son could have the ability to go to the school. She wants a choice. And when she and other mothers and fathers were before the education committee, and they said this, we want this. It was almost as if the Democrats were saying, no, you're too dumb to understand what was going on. And then another Democrat delegate said, you can make that choice now. But they just finished telling you, Mr. Delegate, that they don't have that choice. One mother.
Do you have any support among Democrats in the state legislature?
Sadly, no. Sadly, no. And we're showing the hypocrisy because there are some whose children are in public schools. But you know what happens? They have the money to pay for tutoring. So on the one hand, their child goes to that public school, but they're hiding that they have extra resources to pay for additional schooling that these poor parents don't have. We're tired of playing these stupid games. Our children's future is at risk.
Virginia in particular has a troubled history with payments to parents to send their kids to whatever schools they want. In the 50s, after Brown versus Board of Education, you know, the campaign of massive resistance to integration was centered in Virginia. Voucher programs, which, you know, you say this is not a voucher and it's not, maybe not technically, but it's reminiscent of that, was used to, in certain counties, to get around having to integrate schools. How do you allay the fears of people who, you know, people of good faith? Obviously, the naysayers you're not going to convince, but people are like, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. I'm a little bit troubled by this. Like, how will you evaluate the effect of ESAs on the student populations affected to make sure that this isn't, you know, kind of funneling money away from students who really need it to, and just kind of making everything worse in a way that calls to mind something from the 50s.
As if it could get any worse, because already our children are not learning. But to your point, so yes, you are correct that back in the 50s, there was an issue where we had these segregationists who were closing the public schools and supposedly opening private schools so that the white children could attend, except that it was really the other way around when it came to the vouchers, because what was happening is the Virginia General Assembly was going to pass a bill that moved all tuition into the public sphere, where the parents were going to make the decision on where to send their child to school. And what the white segregationist parents wanted was to say, all right, tell you what, we have desegregated, but it was only on paper, but we're going to now put in zoning and enrollment caps. Well, it turns out that once they realized that if the government gave parents the ability to choose the schools where their children should attend, that meant Black children would have that ability as well. And because, you know, we were trying to do an end run around that. So they gave up decision and decided to open the public schools. And here we are, where, you know, parents have already made certain decisions who have the ability. I'm really out of breath trying to say that we need to help these parents make this decision. How can we look at a mother, at a father, and say, we know that if your child attends this particular school, they have no future, but that's where they have to go anyway? That's all we're saying. Let the parent make that decision.
You and Governor Youngkin were elected in some significant part due to parental outrage over K-12 curricula, including, you know, particularly the way state history was being taught. Last fall, the Board of Education in Virginia rejected the Youngkin administration's new history and social studies guidelines. You've just submitted a new draft. What are the big changes in that from the one that was rejected?
Well, I wouldn't say that it was about the way that history was being taught. They were teaching critical race theory, which is a Marxist theory, which was trying to talk about equal outcomes. There is no such thing, number one. It was also teaching that you're privileged, for example, if you are white, if you are heterosexual, if you are male, and if you're married, if you've served in the armed forces. Silly things like that, because now it encompasses just about everybody, you see. So it really was sowing seeds of chaos, because then you were creating a morale issue in the schools. The white child was told that the white child is an oppressor, and the Black child, you're a victim, you're the oppressed. The children aren't learning. I don't send my child to school for you to indoctrinate. I send my child for you to educate. And that's what we were finding was the problem. In addition to private schools were open for 5 days a week for more than a year, but the public schools were closed and they weren't learning anything. In one family, you even had where one child was sitting in front of a computer like this because they were in public school, but the private school daughter went to school. So the parents were able to see that things weren't working.
So what changed though in the guidelines that were submitted last fall?
Yes, so nothing actually changed, and in fact, for example, Martin Luther King Jr. would be mentioned in more places than he had been before. It's just that unfortunately they collapsed everything, and it appeared that we were taking him out in certain areas when we weren't. You know, the best laid plans, they say. So now they've shown all the different areas, for example, where he will be, and shown that it is more than previous was done. So I tell you, a drowning man, as they say, will clutch at a straw. And when people realize that things are going to change, they throw up every roadblock that they can. They did it in Florida. And now that Florida has all those charter schools and school choice, do you know who's benefiting the most? Black children. Their scores have gone through the roof. And what we're doing in Virginia with our ESA is we're learning from all the other states that have implemented already the ESA. We're starting, if you're looking at, for example, the alphabet, we're not starting at C, we're starting at maybe S even, because we're learning from what other people have done. all the parents want is a chance to make that choice.
How, explain to me, how will, you know, the state curriculum affect parents who decide to send their kids to private schools or to avail themselves of the ESA to the full amount? Well, do the public school curricula guidelines have any, you know, any power or sway over private schools or things like that?
Well, one of the reasons why parents want to make that choice is because some of their children have different learning abilities. They have maybe special needs, or they don't learn by the sage on the stage, as they say. And so they're able now to put their children into more specialized schools. It's independent, you see, but I believe that there might be still some tests that the children will have to take to ensure that they're on the right path. What we know for sure is that they're not on the right path now. So it's just time. The time has come. We cannot waste another year. We need for this to pass so that the children will at some point be able to say, Mom, Dad, what did you do? What did you do to ensure that I would have a future?
You're an inspiring person. You were the subject of a very favorable and warm George Will column recently, but you're an immigrant. You're a service member. You are not just an immigrant from Jamaica to the United States, but then you've lived all over the United States. You're obviously of African descent in a state that has had very fraught racial, history and whatnot. How should we talk about history in schools, you know, in a country that is vast and diverse like America is? Like, what are ways to have real conversations about past, you know, just evil without it becoming, you know, just a way of inflicting or keeping alive, all of the worst things of the past or stoking resentments now? Can you talk a little bit about that and how your experience informs your view of, you know, how should we be talking about the past, the present, and the future?
So, as you know, or maybe, my father came to America from Jamaica in 1963, 17 days before Martin Luther King Jr. gave his I Have a Dream speech. So he came at the height of the civil rights movement. He knew what was happening in America, and yet he begged to get in, filled out the documents, the application form, jumped through hoops and waited his turn. And then he finally got his date to come to America, and he did. And he came with $1.75. Took any job he could find, used that money to put him through school, and now he's comfortably retired. He came at a time when there were actual dog whistles, when we really couldn't sit anywhere we wanted, when we couldn't live where we wanted, all sorts of things. There were covenants against us, redlining, etc.
I mean, interracial marriage was illegal in Virginia until 1967, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And yet he succeeded, and my husband's family, who is from Virginia, of the 15 children that his grandparents had, great-grandparents had, 13 of them have college degrees. They're Black. And so we're saying that, yes, there was a time when things were really bad for us. I asked my father, why would you come? And he said, because this is where the jobs and the opportunities were. So now I would say to you, here I am. How could I say to my father that the reason why I did not succeed is because I am Black? I could not fix my mouth, as they say, to say something like that. Could not. So I am now, I have to make my own way in this world. And here I am. I am second in command in the former capital of the Confederate States. Do not tell me that times have not changed. Now, is it utopia? Of course it's not. There is no such nation. What we do know is that wherever you live, there is going to be some kind of ism. Racism, if it's not that, it's classism. If it's not, it's colorism. If it's not, it's some kind of ism, because we people, not Americans, just but people know how to divide ourselves. So what we have to say then to our children is, look at us. We have overcome. We have, every time an obstacle was thrown in our way, we have overcome. The slaves in the fields did not die so we could be here talking about that we are victims and we are this and we are that. No, we are overcomers. So we're not going to deny history. Heavens no. We must teach all of history. We must talk about the truth of history. Yes, even we must talk about the founders, that some of them were in fact slaveholders. They were imperfect people. But think about, they left us a constitution. They left us the Declaration of Independence, under which I was elected and under which Barack Obama was elected president, not just once, but twice. So while, yes, we have a saying in church, I may not be what I'm supposed to be, but I ain't what I used to be. And that's America. She's getting where she's getting. She's, people are still dying to come into America. Just look at the southern border.
Do you agree we should be letting more of those people in?
I think that they should. We should have to know who's coming into the country.
Sure.
Certainly, our laws must be upheld. And my father, you know, waited his turn, brought his documents, and then we understood. One of the issues we had with COVID was that there was a lot coming across the border, and yet we, the rest of us citizens, were told nothing to see here. You know, you have to stay home, you have to mask up, and hypocrisy.
Do you think, did the arbitrariness of COVID lockdowns in K-12 education, was that that really kind of poured gas on the fire of the school choice movement? Wouldn't you agree?
Well, what has happened is that before, yes, because what has happened is our children weren't learning even before COVID. For example, I went to a majority Black school and visited, and the principal said to me, normally the children come to me 2 years behind. First of all, why are they coming to you if they're 2 years behind? Social promotion. That school choice will stop that. But then she says, not only are they 2 years behind, but as a result of COVID policies shutting our schools down, the kids are now 4 years behind. She threw her hands in the air and she asked me, what am I supposed to do? How do I help these children? So the beauty of ESAs is that it will reduce class size as well, you see. So yes, the child will not be there. Two-thirds of the money stays, but now we've also reduced class size. It's a win-win.
Yeah. Do you think with ESAs, I'm getting my acronyms confused, but with ESAs, there'll be a growing market for different types of schools that will stress different types of, will have different focuses and whatnot. Are you comfortable with of Virginia, where there are a lot more different schools with different curricula, including ones that might focus on something approaching CRT or others on a kind of Christian curriculum and things like that? Is this a moment where a thousand flowers will bloom? Some of them will wilt, some of them will blossom, but that's all good because more parents and more kids will have more choices among, than they have now.
Well, when we make laws, we understand that just about anything can happen. We understand that. But ultimately, what we want, again, is for the parent to make that decision. And parents make all sorts of decisions, but that's their purview. They are responsible for their children. And as I said, if there's a test of some sort and we're finding, the children aren't learning, that parents will be making different choices. But think about it. We introduce competition, things change. When I had my business, if I was the only plumber in town, the only electrician, whatever it was, you lived by my rules, baby. But once competition moved in, I tell you, I got a grip very quickly, changed myself.
I'm on your side, so it doesn't offend me to equate plumbing and schooling. They're both absolutely necessary to civilization. And I think I agree with you that they respond to the same kind of forces of
yes,
competition.
Sir, they do.
You get better. I mean, the average gets better. I guess as a final question, what what's the likelihood that this legislation is going to pass? Because, you know, Virginia, you know, has a lot of tradition. I think you guys are still struggling with, kind of getting the state out of the liquor business in the way that it's been. So are you really going to be able to change the way that Virginia funds its K through 12 education?
As they say, Rome wasn't built in a day. Slavery was not gone in a day. God bless the man who kept for 50 years, wanting to have legislation that would free the slaves in the British Empire or stop the slave trade. And you have to know that it was as a result of what happened in Jamaica with the slave revolt for 6 months, where finally the British Empire also then decided that they were going to get rid of slavery altogether. So what we are saying is we're not going back. And yes, it's going to take a small miracle. It's going to take a miracle because there are people who have nefarious agendas and they're using the suffering of Black people to further keep us apart and at each other's throats. I am hoping that it is God's will that things change and that he opens the eyes of those. It's already started because there are so many Black parents, for example, who came to the education subcommittee and begged and pleaded for change to happen so that they could have the money to send their children to school. And every single Democrat on that subcommittee looked them in the eye and voted no, including the ones who send their children to private school. So their eyes are opening.
Okay, we'll see. But it's going to be a tough slog.
It's going to be a tough fight. It's one worth having. We are going to keep in the fight until the parents get to make that choice. We're trying to save children so that they can have a hope in a future. When I was elected, I wasn't trying to make history. I just wanted to leave Virginia better than I found her. And this is one way of fulfilling that promise.
All right. I think we're going to leave it there. Lieutenant Governor Winsom Sears, thank you so much for talking to Reason today about school choice.
Thank you, sir. And God bless you.
Thanks. This has been the Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. Please, before you do anything else, go to Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts, and sign up for this show. Get it automatically delivered to your internet lookup device without any friction or need to remember anything. Or, for God's sake, make it easy on yourself and just go to reason.com/podcast and you can subscribe there. And while you're at reason.com/podcast, check out the Reason Roundtable, our weekly discussion with me, Matt Welch, Catherine Mangy Ward, and Peter Suderman about the events of the week, the top news stories, and also our monthly Soho Forum Debates podcast, which covers a live debate that is sponsored by Reason every month in Manhattan, New York, and occasionally offsite as well in other places. And it's a fantastic debate show about topics that are of interest, of special interest to libertarians. That's the Reason Roundtable and the Soho Forum Debates, along with the Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. They're all at reason.com/podcast. Go there now. Thanks for listening.